Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City, a 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime. Kansas City wins the game.
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk host as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Excited to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Wednesday. We have so much to get into. Now, I don't know if this is my fault. I don't know if this is Rob's fault. Maybe this is your fault. No one wants to come on the show today. We don't have any guests. Not a one. Rob couldn't even book Steven Spector for a draft. Hey, I got meetings today. No one wants to come on the show today. We might, possibly, perhaps, take phone calls. I can't tell you when we would take phone calls. I'm simply telling you that we might take phone calls. We got a lot to get into in today's show. Rob is very, very upset that Davante Adams suggests that LeBron would be a good football player. Like, I haven't seen him this energized for a topic in about 2 months or so. Carrington, did you see this? What did I need to see? I thought something serious had happened. I thought that another Oklahoma City Thunder player had gotten generational wealth. He's like, no, did you see what Davante Adams says? No. You can always assume the answer to that for me is going to be no. I'm not keeping up with the words of Davante Adams. We'll get to that. We got a lot of stuff to get into. We'll have some fun along the way. 913-586-7965. I need you guys to do me a couple of favors. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day at 2 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan. And I need you to tell one friend to check out the show. It'd be great if you could tell two people to check out the show. But you know what? If you could just tell one person to check out the show, you know what? I would greatly appreciate that. All right, so this is where I would like to begin today's show, because you guys say that I'm hard on the Royals and I'm a hater. And I always say that a hater is somebody who is incapable of giving credit where credit is due. Jack Caglione yesterday really brought the juice.
1-1 pitch. Caglione hits a drive out into the gap in right center field. That's in the alley and gone. Caglione's first home run at Kauffman Stadium. Kind of a sinking line drive. And it went out of the shadows around home plate and over the wall and brightly lit by the sun right center field. So now Caglione has homered at Kauffman Stadium, and he has a total of 3 home runs and puts the Royals up 1-0 here in the second inning.
And no doubt Jack Caglione could feel like he could fly right now.
I'm so happy that Jack Caglione got this monkey off his back. I mean, this is a guy that was brought up here to hit for big-time power. He hit 2 home runs in a road game against the Texas Rangers, and for the most part, he hasn't come close to hitting a home run at Kauffman Stadium. He's hit the ball hard a few times, but hasn't necessarily had that home run power. He did yesterday. He was a major contributor on why the Royals lost yesterday. Rob and I were getting ready for the show, and he asked me if I thought this was just a one-off or this was the sign of something more to come. I don't know if we can answer that definitively yet. I am intrigued. I will say this. Yesterday was Jack Caglione's best day at Kauffman Stadium, and it's not close. Even when it was Jack Caglione Day, I mean, everybody was there. Reggie Jackson was there. George Brett was there. The owner was there. Patrick Mahomes, his wife. I mean, the whole city came out for that one. Jack didn't play poorly in that one, but he also didn't play well. Yesterday was big for him to hit a home run in the fashion in which he did, to contribute to a win, to see this team clinch a winning series yesterday against the Pittsburgh Pirates, was a really, really good sign for Jack Caglione. You got to build it one day at a time. It sounds cliche, but how you turn this thing around if you're the Royals, how you get going if you're Jack Caglione, you got to string some good days together. this organization went on the road and beat the Seattle Mariners in a series. Now you come home, you at least at a minimum take two or three against the Pirates. You put yourself in a position to potentially sweep the Pittsburgh Pirates. This is where you want to be. Rob, I know that you and I, for the most part, kind of stand in lockstep about this team's big picture hopes for the rest of this year and about this team's playoff positioning, but none of that matters at this point. I thought Vern made a good point. They are not making a trade for Seth Lugo on July 9th. Maybe they do on July 29th, but that's 3 weeks from now. All you need to do is focus on where you are right now and winning series. And you got a chance, if you're the Royals, to sweep this series at home against the Pittsburgh Pirates, one of the bottom five teams in baseball. You got a very good Mets team coming in, a team that's going to make the postseason in the National League. If you can find a way to win that series and you're two games under 500 heading into the All-Star break, you get a couple of days to exhale. You come back on the other side, and maybe you continue to stay hot and go on a little bit of a run. I still think the Royals are ultimately going to make a trade here or two, but I don't think there's any reason to make that determination now. Just keep trying to stack good days. Keep trying to stack series wins on top of one another and see what happens.
I mean, I don't know they have a chance to win the city back. I worry, and I know the text line yesterday was saying we were hard on the Royals. I worry as we inch closer and closer, the Chiefs reporting to St. Joe, as they remain under 500, you might feel the city tune out. But that's not the Royals' responsibility. Their responsibility is to be competitive and be a good baseball team. And beating the Pirates is step one. You've won the series. You've now won back-to-back series. You have a chance to sweep the Pirates. And if you win a series against the Mets, there's going to be good vibes going into the All-Star break. And coming out of the All-Star break, you got the Marlins who stink. And if you think, hey, you're over 500, it's July 21st or whatever, and the Chiefs are pointing to camp, there might be a reason to dream a dream a little bit. I would still sell Seth Lugo in that world. But you as a Royals fan, if you are still the eternal optimist, this team is giving you a reason to be optimistic. They are playing better baseball. I know it's schedule driven, but better baseball is all you ask for. One of the reasons that June was so frustrating is teams like the Pirates, the A's, for example, came into town and beat you up. There's no reason that should have been happening. The Royals are getting back to what they should be doing. Keep losing teams losing and, you know, see what you can do when you have to punch above your weight class. Good crowd last night. I feel like there's still an energy in town for this team, and they're doing what's asked of them. Get back into the hunt. Let's see where they are by All-Star break. Let's see where they are by the time the Braves roll into town. It's the 28th, and that's the week of the deadline. You know, just see where you're at. I know it kind of fell on deaf ears. J.J. Piccolo spoke to the media a few days ago and said, you know, we just kind of want to see where we're at with this point in the season. Royals fans kind of feel like they want more than that, but it is starting to feel like they're starting to stack some good stuff together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, a lot of it you mentioned is just going to be schedule driven, and it's just taking care of the games that you need to take care of. You went on the road, you beat Arizona, you've won these first two games against Pittsburgh. Let's see if you can get the sweep. Let's see how you handle it against the Mets. I mean, you have a good pitching situation. You have Michael Wacha going on Friday night, Michael Lorenzen going on Saturday, and then you got Noah Cameron coming up on Sunday. So, I mean, from a pitching standpoint, we know that this team is going to be competitive. Have to assume that the Royals are going to be pretty big favorites coming up later today with Bubich on the hill. With that pitcher going up against that offense, would have to assume that the Royals are pretty decent favorites today. They sit at 45 and 48. Again, if you can just handle these next couple of days, maybe you go on a little bit of a winning streak here. You can get back to 500, maybe one game under 500 as we head into the All-Star break. And I think you have to feel good about that if you're the Royals. If you take a look to the second half, and I don't want to look too far ahead, I mean, you got Miami coming up right after that. You then go on the road and play the Cubs. I mean, Miami, that's a team that you should be able to take care of business on. We could be talking about this team potentially being above 500 the next time they come back home toward the end of the month on July 25th. We're going to bounce around a lot today. We appreciate you guys listening. Listen to The Drive here on 96.5 The Fan. Coming up on the other side, they are potentially looking to expand the NCAA tournament. We'll talk about it next. Keep it right here. So Drive.
Hey, it's Cole Reagans from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with C-Dot on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Allow me to be the old man that stands on the cloud, or stands on the soapbox and screams at the cloud for just a bit. In a column for Pat 40 for Sports Illustrated, in the upcoming days, the NCAA is expected to expand the NCAA tournament. They are looking to expand it from 68 teams, where it currently sits, to 72 or 76 teams in the NCAA tournament. I am not for this at all. This is my frustration, and this is what makes me want to stand on the soapbox and scream at the clouds. I don't think the people that govern and run college athletics know why we like college athletics. I would say, number one, what I think people like most about college is the community of it all. Think about the old school Big East, how you had all of those schools in a very close proximity to one another, and how intense the rivalry between those schools would be. You were fighting for the same players, or you were fighting for your bit of territory. The DC kids wanted to show that they were better than the New York kids, wanted to show that they were better than the Philadelphia kids. You had all of these schools very closely tied together in their own part of the country, and you wanted to see if your area, your city, your neighborhood was the best. Think about the old Big 8, Big 12 days. It felt like a community. All of those schools, for the most part, are within driving distance of one another. Whether it's Columbia and Kansas and Manhattan and Ames, all of these schools are within a four-hour span of one another. So every year when you guys make that short drive to come together to a city like Kansas City, it's a really big deal. We see how Iowa State comes down and takes over the city and the back and forth with KU. It's fun. That's what makes college sports so fun and so unique. It's that rivalry. It's that competition. Well, at least in the regular season, they've killed it for the most part. We went a decade missing games between Missouri and Kansas, a decade of missing games between Texas A&M and Texas, a decade of missing games between Nebraska and Oklahoma. Those games that mattered, that made college football the sport that it is today, what made college basketball such an intriguing regular season sport. I think that the college voices have this thing all wrong. We don't need any help to make the postseason more interesting. It's automatically going to be interesting. You're competing for a championship. You don't have to put more sauce on that. Hey, whoever wins this tournament is the champion. We deem them as the best. That has its own intrigue attached to it. But what we always needed more juice was for the regular season. Well, the regular season used to have juice because it wasn't just winning a conference. It was bragging rights of all of the people around you. Like, part of being a KU fan is all of the success, but it's also that you get to claim you're superior to everybody around you. To K-State, to Missouri, to Iowa State. That's part of what makes being a Kansas fan fun. They've taken some of that away. You know what really upsets me about this expansion of the NCAA tournament? They're not doing it for the little guy. I know they're going to spin it like now there's more opportunities for Drake or Missouri State and those kinds of programs to make the NCAA tournament. We all know that's not what it is. The same way that I told you that the college football playoff was just them repackaging and repurposing the bowls, that kids told you we don't want to play in these bowls, but they figured out a way to get those kids to play by just calling it the playoff. This is what they're doing with the NCAA tournament. It is obvious to spot. They have expanded these conferences and these leagues too much. And now you have 18 teams in these leagues. Everybody can't play each other in basketball the way that they used to. And some schools' schedule is unbalanced. Now, we got to be fair to the 13th or 14th best team that's in this conference. We've done everything to get them to come here. So how do we do it? Well, I mean, you can have a losing record in your conference, but you can still make the NCAA tournament. That's what they're doing this for. They are expanding the tournament to make sure that the 15th best team in the SEC and the 13th best team in the Big Ten are okay. They're not doing this to get more teams from the Sun Belt. They're not doing this to get more schools for the MAC. No, they're doing this to get more schools for the SEC, more schools for the Big Ten, more average schools that weren't good enough in the preseason that weren't good enough in the non-con, that weren't good enough in the regular season, couldn't win their conference tournament. We got to still give them an opportunity to make the NCAA tournament. You weren't good enough. I really hate this. Ultimately, it probably won't matter, right? I mean, they expanded from 64 to 68, and we still watch the NCAA tournament. It still has our interest. But I guess I'm just tired. I'm tired of everything that they do that makes the sport worse that we enjoy. They made more money. How much more money do they need? They have a system in which they don't have to pay the employees, in which somebody else pays them. They got the best system going. There's no better system than they have. They get a $1 billion television deal and don't have to share it with the employees at all. And they'll get Amazon to pay them. That's great. How much more money do they need that run college athletics? It's just all a scam and a scheme. I hate this. And I don't know why they spend so much time trying to make something that's already interesting more interesting, at least in their term, instead of trying to make the regular season more interesting. That's the problem. College basketball does not have a tournament problem. It has a regular season basketball problem. You don't care. You tune in late February, early March. When football winds down, it's like, oh, well, I mean, there's no baseball on. I mean, I guess I'll watch college basketball. You get into it for 3-4 weeks, and then you move on to something else. What about the fan that really cares in December and January? How do we keep those fans engaged when you've given them less interesting regular season games to follow? We've signed up for a system that has Stanford and Duke in the same conference, that has Rutgers and UCLA in the same conference. And what did we do all this for? It used to be cool. The West Coast had their own league. The Midwest had their league. The South had their league. The southeastern part of the country had their league. The Northeast, everybody kind of had their own thing. But no, we had to keep making more money. We had to grab as much of that television money as we possibly could. And we have expanded these leagues. And Rob, now we got 16 teams that are going to make the college football playoff, knowing there's only 4 that can actually win it. They're about to put 76 teams in the NCAA tournament. 2 thumbs down.
We talked about this yesterday. You joked that the greatest swindle in America is the idea that, you know, the average person helps pay taxes for a billionaire stadium. I still think that's number one. But you know what the other way sports and money people have gotten over on the regular fan? The idea that me or you as college athletics fans care about how much money my university has. Because let's be honest, these university presidents and these TV executives, that's what they care about. And they have broken college athletics. And there's been a trickle-down effect. When Missouri and KU stopped playing, KU and Missouri fans should have been mad. They should have been frustrated. They should have been upset. But the conversation shifted. Mizzou fans saying, sucks to suck. You're in a lesser conference. Look how much money we're going to make over here. A&M in Texas, same thing happened. Then we had another shift in college athletics, another wild pivot with another wave of realignment. Same conversation. Oregon fans were making fun of Oregon State. Ha ha, no one cares about you. You're a bum school. You can't make any money now. Sucks to suck. Why are fans having that conversation? Fans should be distraught. Fans should be upset. A rivalry that meant something to my community, my fan base, my team was stolen from me so ESPN and Fox and those sorts of outlets can make more money. But for some reason, the average fan went along with it and said, hey, more money for my school. That's what matters. I don't really care. I'm not playing Kansas. I don't really care. I'm not playing Missouri. It doesn't bother me. I don't face K-State anymore. I make more money. And it's sad. And now it has leached its way from realignment into other parts of college sports. And we all see that's a cash grab. But because 12, 13, 14, however many years ago, fans went along with it with realignment as we chased cash, I feel like the powers that be have disconnected with fans, and they have convinced themselves that fans care more about how much money their athletic program makes, way more so than the actual games on the field. I, as a Kansas fan, don't want to play Arizona State. I don't enjoy playing Arizona State. I feel no connection to playing Arizona State. You know what I enjoy playing? Nebraska. That would be fun for me in football and basketball. But at least I got a BYU matchup to look forward to.
I was watching a TikTok. This was, I don't know, maybe like a week or so ago, and I should have sent you the audio. And I felt very good about it that James Cameron and I had the same approach when it came to movies. Now, I mean, you know, I've made a movie. He's made, you know, maybe a couple movies. You know what I mean? There's a lot of similarities between me and James Cameron. But the point of this is James Cameron said that there should be a tier system at the movie theater, that there is no reason why Avatar 2 should cost the same as some other movies, that there are some movies that, yes, it should be a $20, $30 movie. Going to see Superman should be a premium experience. It's maybe the biggest movie of the year. Going to see Jurassic World, going to see the big Marvel movie. But there's some movies we all know. Well, why is this movie $15 to go see at the theater? No, it's a nice little 90-minute laugh, ha-ha-ha kind of movie. The reason I make this analogy is what works for football and how you can put your football conference together is not how you should put your basketball conference together, not how you should put your college baseball conference together and all of these other sports. I think we have enough data to suggest, hey, football is its own independent being. I don't really mind Missouri being in the SEC for football. Yes, I don't have those same connections, but you're also in the best football conference in the world. So it's seeing Missouri play an Ole Miss, play a Florida, play a Georgia, play a South Carolina. That's interesting. Well, then they also got to play those teams in basketball. And that ain't as fun watching them play those teams at basketball. If you're an Arizona fan, I don't know how fun it is to watch Arizona play West Virginia or Cincinnati. There's random basketball teams that we've just thrown all into the pot kind of together and called it a conference. The best thing for the college basketball regular season, not talking about the tournament. The tournament doesn't need any help. The tournament's great. It's a single elimination tournament that takes place over a month. That's an easy thing to sell to anybody. The best thing for college basketball would be to have it operate independently the same way that we want college football to operate independently. Why can't you have your own separate league when it comes to basketball and football? Like, if you really want to be forward thinking and think about what is in the best interest of it, it is not for Penn State and UCLA to be in the same basketball conference. That might work in football. You go out there once every 4 years. Yeah, it's great. It's a road trip. Your fans want to do it. That's not the way basketball works. On a Wednesday night, when you're trying to convince the fan at USC to come out and watch them play Rutgers in a home game, that's not the way that works. I think the best thing for college basketball, and maybe we'll never see them do this, is to break off and have your own separate basketball leagues. Hey, we have our West Coast Basketball League. We have the Midwest Basketball Conference, the Southeastern Conference Basketball Conference. That would be in the best interest of everybody. I don't think that we'll see it. But then I think you could have these teams in the regular season in basketball better positioned where, you're right, there's no reason, Rob, why Washington and Washington State don't play anymore. Or Oregon or Oregon State anymore. You've been playing these games for 100 years. But you felt the nervousness of the conference alignment shifting. So if you're Oregon, you had to go to the Big Ten. You couldn't stay in the Pac-12 anymore. It was no longer viable for you to be there.
I think we see this largely the same way. I think it would work in basketball and football if we got away from the super conferences. I get what you're saying about basketball. You're right. As a Missouri fan, I imagine playing, you know, Alabama is a fun experience and one you really can't replicate in the Big 12 as it's currently set. But I would tell you, if you rewound the clock 20 years ago and I said, Carrington, what team do you really enjoy coming to Columbia for a chance to beat them because they're a big bad bully? You would have told me Oklahoma. You would have told me Nebraska. It's the same sensation. Now, yeah, Alabama and Georgia are better football programs than, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, Nebraska were. But it's the same sensation. I think, talk about breaking away. I hope that football breaks away and goes to eight small eight-team conferences, and then we have a 16-team playoff. And you know what? If that means no more bowl games, no more bowl games. I don't need to see the Insight.com or the Poinsettia. I don't need to see those.
They make way too much money on bowl games. They ain't get rid of them bowl games.
If we're going to have pie-in-the-sky conversations, let's have pie-in-the-sky conversations.
I'm not mad at that, but you and I both know on a random Tuesday, the most popular thing on television is that random college football bowl game. They ain't getting rid of the Insight Bowl.
And it's always got a corporate sponsorship. The Duke's Mayo 100%. Bowl just, I get the cash grab it is. I don't like it.
The Pop-Tart Bowl. That is fun.
Well, they at least lean into it as a bit.
For sure.
My point is, if they break away from the NCAA and do their own thing, let's get back to conferences and making regular season games matter for the fans. You mentioned UCLA and Penn State, and that's a fun one-off road trip. Is it, though? Like, when the schedule comes out, are UCLA fans going, you know what? I really want to go to Happy Valley this year. I would say they don't, because it ain't cheap to get from Los Angeles to Happy Valley, even for a one-off game.
You're right. That is true. But I do think, I don't think we see this as much just because of where we live. But I would say in the same way that NFL fans, Rob, there's a lot of people really excited to go down to Cowboys Stadium for Thanksgiving. Like, you don't get that opportunity very often. If you're a big college football fan and you're telling me that you're a big Penn State fan and once every 8 years your team's going to play at Oregon, for example, something tells me that, hey, that's the one big trip that you make. I mean, Kansas State is playing a game in Ireland coming up in a couple of months or so. So, yeah, I do think there's those passionate group of fans that this is a once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-every-10-year opportunity. I'm definitely going to make that trip. They're not making that trip for basketball, but we all know just football and what people are willing to do to go to support their favorite football team is usually very different. All right, Rob, you know what I think we're going to need to do? I think we're going to need to compile at some point, maybe in August, all of these opinions from people that have been coming down the line, whether it's Colin Cowherd picking the Chargers to win the division, whether it's this person saying the Chiefs have fallen off, or that person, or whomever it may be. One day during a Royals Day game, me and you need to sit down and go through the list and find all of these people who have said these things about the Chiefs. Well, the most recent person is Mark Schlereth. I would consider him friend of the show. He's been on the show multiple times. He's on Breakfast Ball with our dear friend Danny Parkins. I'm willing to consider Mark Schlereth to be friend of the show. Well, earlier today on The Breakfast Ball on FS1, be sure to check it out, he said this about the Chiefs.
I will say this, though. I think for the first time, and I'm a Bronco fan. You know,
of course
I,
you are.
I have the Denver in my blood. I think for the first time in a long time, I do a radio show in Denver. People feel like there was a time.
Like blood in the water?
Yeah, there was a time that Patrick Mahomes was the boogeyman, right? Like,
sure.
There's nothing we can do. But there feels like there's this league-wide sense that this is the first time in Kansas City, in his tenure at Kansas City, that they're vulnerable. Like, that somebody else could
creep up and win this season.
Right, win this division. And we all picked it, I think, yesterday, right? I think you said the Chargers. I said the Chargers.
That wasn't that they would. It's like, who's most likely?
Most likely. Like, before there was no most likely.
Right.
Kansas City's winning. It's most likely to come in second was the conversation we were having.
All right. I think there is a small shred of truth to what he is saying. But I think there's a very important lesson to be learned in all of this. The same way how the Chiefs, they did the same thing that a lot of teams do. The Chiefs didn't do anything special to go get Patrick Mahomes. They liked a quarterback in the draft. They identified who that quarterback was. They moved up and they drafted him. We've seen that happen a million times before. It just worked better for the Chiefs. The Chiefs drafted the right prospect with the right head coach, the right organization. They got all of those things to line up. And look, you created a dynasty. I certainly believe that there are teams out there that feel this way about the Chiefs. Hey, look at what happened at the Super Bowl. They're vulnerable. We can get those guys. If you're a real competitor and you see the Chiefs get drug around the way that they did for 60 minutes down in New Orleans, I think you're kidding yourself if you don't think that other teams feel this way about the Chiefs this offseason. You saw Mahomes bleed for the first time. It was like Rocky IV. He's a man. He bleeds. You saw it. I'm here telling you that you ain't the Eagles. That, yeah, if you're Denver and you think, well, hey, look what Philadelphia did, you ain't Philadelphia. You don't have their quarterback. You don't have their running back. You don't have their offensive line. You don't have their wide receivers. You don't have their defense. You, in fact, don't have any of the ingredients to do what they did to the Chiefs. You don't have any of those. So, yeah, some of those teams are going to feel that way. Hey, we think we can punch Kansas City in the mouth. Okay, you better have a lot more firepower, because what I have seen is maybe the Chiefs didn't get that one team on that one day. They done beat a lot of the rest of you up. A lot of the rest of you up. Hey, maybe Drake couldn't beat Kendrick Lamar in a battle. He will beat a lot of these other people in a battle. That's how it goes sometimes. So I just think that's a very dangerous message to give. Oh, the league doesn't fear. Okay. All right. Hey, if that's how you feel, good. Patrick Mahomes is what? 41-5 in the division? 31 and something? He's only lost five times. I know that much. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's been to 5 Super Bowls, won 3 of them, 2 MVPs. If you're telling me the league's not afraid of that guy anymore, okay. I can give you a bunch of reasons why you should still be very, very afraid of the Chiefs and afraid of what they can do. And if Kansas City is going to be healthy this year, knock on wood, you're going to give Mahomes an improved offensive line, a healthier run game. We believe to be a better wide receiver group if guys stay healthy this year. Still a capable defense. You're going to keep giving that guy those weapons, that resources, and that infrastructure around him. Maybe you're not afraid of the Chiefs anymore. That's a team that still wins 11 or 12 games. That's a team that's still in the conversation to win the Super Bowl. That's still a team that you're going to have to beat in January. And there have not been a whole lot of teams over the last half decade that have beaten the Chiefs in January or February.
I agree with you, but I think his point is this, and I think his point's kind of well taken. Maybe not the Broncos, but I'm betting there is a group of teams in the NFL who feel like they were one play away from beating the Chiefs last year, and they didn't make that one play, and then they felt like, oh, you just can't get over this Mahomes hump. And then they saw the Eagles not just beat the Chiefs, humiliate the Chiefs. That was a game where if you weren't in Kansas City, if you're watching the Super Bowl and you were a fan of football in, I don't know, Grand Rapids, you probably turned it off because that football game was over. It was over before your wings got cold. It was dead and gone. And I would imagine the how on a lot of the Chiefs' wins last year, because they were winning by, you know, the skin of their teeth, combined with that game, instilled a level of confidence in, again, not the middle tier of the NFL, but I'm betting if you went and put truth serum in the Bills, they feel more confident this year because, hey, the Eagles did that to them and we were 3 points down. Anyone can do that to them. I bet the Ravens feel the same way. I bet pick the Lions feel like they this year can do that to them. Pick a team. So I think Mark Schlereth is a bad vessel for this message because he says the Broncos, which are not in that caliber. But I think even people in Kansas City have to be aware that there's probably a level of confidence that exists across the league that didn't exist a couple years ago because of the drubbing they took in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I think that some of this is just kind of par for the course. I mean, you and I kind of said this at the very beginning of it, is you can't get beat the way the Chiefs did and then not think that people are going to come for you after that. I mean, this is just kind of, you didn't lose a 27-24 heartbreaking game. I mean, you weren't in it for the final 45 minutes of the game. It was 41-6 heading into the fourth quarter of the game. So some of this just comes with the, hey, it's a what have you done for me lately kind of league, and you have to constantly be proving it. And if your last game, one of the most watched games in the history of the NFL, is you getting taken out back and shemacked, you got to prove it to people all over again. It sounds weird to say, but I just wouldn't underestimate Kansas City. And some of the comments that I've heard so far this summer just sound like the league is underestimating Kansas City, which doesn't really make any sense to me because that's the same roster that won 15 of 16 regular season games last year. Like, I've just heard so much about regression. Sure, maybe they regress to 12 wins. 12 wins is enough to win the AFC West and possibly be the one seed in the AFC. I just heard so much about regression that I think people are forgetting that this is still the 3-time defending AFC championship team, even if they lost in the Super Bowl. Coming up on the other side, this next segment has no other purpose other than for you guys to pat me on the back. I'll explain. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, two things I like to accomplish in this segment. Thing number one, this is now number one on the list for the most accurate thing that a woman has said about a man. I remember the first most accurate thing I'd ever seen. And Rob, maybe you were this way. I know I'm this way. This woman was describing going over a man's house. And then he said to her, I want to show you something. And it was a YouTube video. And then they spent 30 minutes watching YouTube. And they were saying how one of men's love languages is sending random YouTube videos and TikTok videos to one another. And I was like, how does this person know me so well? Rob, I send you TikTok videos and you don't even use TikTok. I just want you to see it. I don't know how you're going to see it, but maybe one day you'll download TikTok so you understand me just a little bit better. We'll have a better radio show if you download TikTok, but you're not willing to do what it takes. You're out here taking vacation in the middle of the summer, going to the lake. You're not focused. You can't be doing that and not on TikTok too. You got to pick a lane here if you really want to see this show take the next step and we can hopefully stay employed until the football season. That's number one. Now, this might honestly be the most accurate thing I've ever seen a woman say about a man. This woman, her name is Alex Friedman, and she tweets, "Men are funny because you can ask one what his best friend does for work, and he'll say, I don't know. Meanwhile, they've known each other for 20 years, and they talk every day." Yes, I have absolutely no clue. Rob, be honest. If I went through your five best male friends and I ask you, hey, what's their job description? Where do they work? I don't know if you would go 5 for 5 from the field. You might go like 2 for 5 from the field. You ain't going 5 for 5 from the floor if I ask you what your best friends do for work. That's actually a pretty accurate representation of male conversation. I mean, people that I have been in their weddings, like I'm their kid's godfather. Like these are close family friends. No clue what you do for work. Absolutely no clue. None. This is accurate. I know I'm not the only one. Text line 913-586-7965. You don't know what some of your best friends do for work. You know they got a job. You might even know they got a good job. You might kind of know where they work. You don't know what their title is. You don't know what they do every day. No clue. You have no clue what they do.
I could probably name the company, but if you ask for a job title, I'd be like, I think they're somewhere in this ballpark. Something. I would not get it right. I would not go 5 for 5. There's a Instagram reels are what I watch. It's the same as TikTok, just 10 days later. There's an Instagram reel where a guy comes back from golfing and he tells his wife, I had a great time. She's like, oh, what's new with your friend Jeff? I don't know. But, well, what'd you guys talk about? I heard his wife's sick. We didn't talk about that. Didn't talk about that. What did you guys talk about? You hung out for 4 hours. That's men friendships in a nutshell. I could go hang out and get drinks and watch a game with someone, and I can get home and my wife would be like, hey, what is new with Nate? I'd be like, I don't know, but we both thought they should have gone for it on 4th and 1. I have no clue what's going on in your personal life. That's not how men really communicate like that.
Now, this is the thing, though. I think men know what's going on in each other's personal life if something's wrong with the person that they're with.
Or a big event. Huge event.
Like, you know if he's not getting along with this girl, you absolutely hear about it. Hey, man, Amanda tripping. Yo, bro, what's going on? She's going to tell you this. He's going to tell you the story and you're going to relate to it. That's 100%. But there's no reason why my best friend should be calling me to tell me how his day is going to work. Bro, I don't care. I love you to death. I also think this is the thing too. And this is just the difference in men and women communicate. This happens to every single man listening. Your wife will come home and tell you stories about people at work. A, like you know these people and like she's telling you some great, and she really wants you to be invested in the characters. Rob, you won't believe what Cody did earlier today. What did he do? Well, you know Cheyenne from downstairs, like she'll really go into this deep story. You only met one of these people at a company party. You don't really remember them, but it was like a, hey, how's it going? You had like a quick conversation. She will tell you a long detailed story. That's never happened with you to another man. You've never went and been like, hey, Rob, you can't believe what happened today. And then I tell you a long story about random people that I work with. Women do that. Men don't.
I also feel like men, when we hang out with men, don't care about the minutia. I will ask my friend, hey, man, what's new with you? And when he says nothing, we're good.
That's it. That's the end of it. No, for sure.
There was nothing he needed to report. There was nothing I needed to hear. If I go to KU basketball games a lot. I share my tickets with a friend. We every once in a while go get a beer before. Hey, anything new? Nah, I'm good. Anything new with you? Nah.
Yeah, for sure. Status good.
Sometimes status quo is a win.
That's it.
I feel like, and my wife does this, she'll be like, hey, I hung out with my friend. Oh, what's new with her? She has 500 stories. How is that possible? Status quo is status quo. How do you have 500 stories about your day-to-day? Your day-to-day must be an absolute dumpster fire if you have 500 stories.
I'm with you. No, that's 100% accurate. I'm serious. That's 100% accurate. You're confused. Like, genuinely confused. But no, I'm telling you, this is the most accurate tweet. that I've ever seen in my entire life. Men are funny because you can ask one what his best friend does for work and he'll be like, I don't know. Meanwhile, they've known each other for 20 years and talk every day. Like, you have a friend right now that you love. Tomorrow, if your friend was like, hey, I need a kidney, you would give that friend your kidney. Tomorrow, if your friend needed a blood transfusion, I'll do anything for you. Hey, where do I work? I don't know. How long have I worked there? No clue. Not a small clue of where they work. That's really being a man in a nutshell. That was a very, very enjoyable tweet. I enjoyed reading that. Rob, let me ask you this. Are you willing to give me some credit? Because I'm playing a little bit injured today. So I had some pizza a couple of days ago, and the pizza burned the roof of my mouth. It did. Yesterday was actually a struggle. You know, over time, you kind of heal. It bounces back. By Friday, I'm sure I'll be 100%. But I'm playing a little bit injured. Now, this wouldn't be that big of a deal, but I talk for a living. So I just, my mouth is constantly moving. It's not comfortable, but I'm a survivor. I'm a fighter, so I'm going to push through it. I compete. That's why I'm here. I'm not just taking random days off like Rob in the middle of the week to just willy-nilly do whatever. No, I'm here. I'm willing to play through it. This is kind of like my flu game, if I'm being honest. This is kind of like I got a stomach bug, but it's game 6 of the NBA Finals. So you know what? I'll take an IV and push through. Now, let me ask you this. What's the worst pain? Is it burning the roof of your mouth? Is it biting your tongue? Hitting your elbow? What's the worst pain that you can have in these situations?
Stubbing your toe. Stubbing your toe is the absolute right answer. A, you automatically feel like an idiot that you forgot how to walk and ran your toe into a table leg or a couch or what have you. And the immense shooting immediate pain nearly cripples you and brings you to your knees. And you just hate that it all transpired because it's the stupidest thing. So listen, roof of your mouth stinks. If you were smart, you would take a few minutes to wait for that hot pizza. The elbow thing stinks, but it's like you can kind of shake it off in a few seconds. Biting your tongue is in that same vein, but eventually you just push through. Stubbing your toe is the absolute stupidest and worst pain you feel.
If you hit your elbow the right way, you feel like you need Tommy John surgery at the end of it. I'm serious. Like, you feel like you need Tommy John surgery. You know, you get that like real stingy feeling. You know what I'm talking about? You get that like real stingy feeling in your arm. You feel like your arm is basically going to fall off. Someone said, what about when you get hit in the balls? I mean, it's an undeniable number one. We all agree that that's number one. We fellas here, we don't have to debate on what hurts more than that. No, that's number one. It's number one with the exclamation point. That hurts. We're talking about the other pain that you get. I'm telling you, when you hit your elbow and you feel that, oh, that numbing sensation, you can't move your hand. Oh, it's the absolute worst feeling that you can have. All right, coming up at the top of the hour, you know what I'd like to get to? What I'd like to get to is, I'm going to call it Wild Card Wednesday. I looked up some statistics, and I'd be very curious to get your thoughts on what you think these statistics mean. I'll tell you what they are next. Keep it right here, Sir Drive.